You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Heat, your semi-daily podcast on all things Miami Heat. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with Dave Vermil. As far as the schedule goes, a little late on the second show this week. Sorry for that, but we'll have two parts of our mailbag for the rest of this week, and then we're going to be off next Monday for the holiday, David. And because if I possess any one thing, it is impeccable timing. I am flying into Florida for right in time for Dorian, so I'm very excited. I cleared out the weekend schedule, had the long Labor Day weekend, and I'm going to get to sit inside all weekend long.
Well, I'll give you the same advice that I'll give all our listeners in Florida. Be safe above all else. You know, obviously, you get a little desensitized, I think, in South Florida. You wait in line for gas, you pay too much for water, and then next thing you know, you're having drinking parties in your apartment or house, and you're trying to just ride it out, but you never know when that one storm could hit, and it could be dangerous, but just be safe, and hopefully we'll be able to record next week, and you'll be back home.
Yeah, and hopefully. I think that actually the recording of the podcast would be the least of my worries if I couldn't somehow get back home, but we're going to record a couple podcasts now, so in case you guys are locked indoors all weekend and need to catch up on things, boom, we got some mailbags for you. Nice. We're answering emails and tweets on this week's mailbag. We've got questions about what Heat player will take the most threes next season, and if the Blazers could possibly get the most out of Hassan Whiteside in the way the Heat couldn't. But let's start with this question from Roshan, who writes in, how would you grade the Heat's offseason? Dunked On podcast gave it a C+. They didn't agree with the Hero pick, thought the Heat gave up too much in trades, whether it be for Kaze Akpala and the Clippers deal. And then they valued Jimmy Butler as equal to Josh Richardson as an asset, but said that Jimmy is a better player. So Dunked On, our friends over there, giving them a C+. What do you think about that?
I think it's next to impossible to try and accurately get the nuances of an offseason for people that don't follow the team as closely as we do, to be honest with you. I understand they're looking at it from more of a analytical perspective, more, and you know, the perfect case of equaling Jay Rich to Butler as an quote-unquote asset. I think you tend to look at the team specifically as a collection of assets and trade picks and futures and things of this sort, and you kind of dismiss simple narratives that really do have a factor. And I think the acquisition of Jimmy Butler is a huge improvement for Miami, not just in terms of talent, because I think he is a better player and more talented than Jay Rich, but also a player who can get the most out of the other players on this roster. And I think that's going to be a huge factor in determining Miami's success this season. So to me, I would actually rate their offseason a B+. I think the Hero pick can be a little questionable in the sense that we don't expect him to have a major impact this season, and we're counting on him being a long-range shooter. And if that's the case, that's going to be beneficial for Miami a couple of years down the road when Goran Dragic may not be on this roster, or maybe Deion Waiters isn't on this roster, and you're looking for competent perimeter shooting. Hero can be that player. And if he's not too much of a deficit on defense, he could wind up being a really good pick. I'll trust Miami's front office based on the fact that they've had some incredible success, not just in drafting players, but also in finding talent that was not draftable, you know, Tyler Johnson, et cetera, even Hassan Whiteside to an extent. And so, if you're also looking at what you gave up in trades, I think it's also worth it to move Hassan Whiteside's contract and his personality out of that locker room. I think that's going to be a huge benefit towards Miami. So all these little things where on the outside you could say you're getting rid of an asset or you're giving up too much to do so, I think it's a little unfair and not realistically putting all the different factors and narratives and everything together. So to me, I would rate this offseason as a B+, just because we're not quite sure how it's all going to pan out. It could wind up being disastrous. Hero could be a bust. Jimmy could wind up blowing that locker up even further.
The worst case scenario can happen, right? But the draft thing, I'm just like, can we table that? I mean, the idea, look, I know that we have to come out here, and look, we did a recap of the draft, and I think you and I were mixed with Tyler Hero, and I think we're a little bit more optimistic. Surprise, yeah. After Summer League and everything like that. But overall, I don't care about Summer League. I don't really care about the draft right now because we have no idea how it's going to play out. The one thing I will say about the draft is that if you look who the Heat passed up in order to take Tyler Hero, who on the board were the Heat supposed to, like, who was the shoe-in that you were supposed to take? Is it going to be that bad if they took Tyler Hero over Romeo Langford or Sekou Doumbouya? I don't think so. I think a lot of people liked Grant Williams, But Grant Williams wasn't right for the Heat. There wasn't anybody on the board. I mean, people, oh, Nassir Little. Well, Nassir Little dropped all the way to 25.
Yeah.
He went 12 picks later. I mean, Brandon Clark looks good, but also not a fit for the Heat. Tyler Hero fits. He's as good as anybody else was on the board. He might be great. He might not. It doesn't matter with the draft. As far as the grade goes, the Heat should have gotten an A+, an absolute A+. I don't know what they were supposed to do this offseason. They had negative cap space, negative assets. They had nothing to work with. Most, you know, the dunked on folks, and by the way, I know Nate and I know Danny, and I like them, and I talk with them at the games and stuff, but they're absolutely out of their mind with this. They're absolutely out of their mind with this, because the Heat had they expected the Heat on their offseason preview to basically be the same team into next year, and you go and get a top 13 NBA player, you have a solid draft, you trade basically nothing to go get Casey Akpala, who has great upside, you somehow are able to manufacture assets, and then put yourself in position to say, you know what, we don't want Russell Westbrook. You know what, we don't want Chris Paul. We're going to wait and see. We've got Bradley Beal in the crosshairs. They've put themselves in a great position now. Now, I'm not saying they put themselves in a great position to go win the championship, but nobody expected that. But nobody expected this either. This is an absolute A+. Hit this offseason out of the park. You got rid of Hassan Whiteside somehow. I don't know what else they were supposed to do.
Yeah, you've sold me, to be honest with you. I'm not sure. A+. I'm that
teacher. A+.
I don't give A+s, man. I give A's, okay? I'm sorry. I'll give the team an A.
A's, I think yeah. Okay. Come on, Nate, Danny, if you're listening to this, which you're not. Because if you were listening to this, you would have given him an A. I have a very big problem. And, you know, like I said, I like these guys. I disagree with them on a lot of stuff. Not everything, but a lot. And they do tend to look at things from just an asset perspective. I understand that Josh Richardson is a great asset. But Jesus, like, if you could get Jimmy Butler, you just go do it. Like, they upgraded their roster in a way that was seemingly impossible.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the most important thing. And you hit it on the head, too. You get Jimmy Butler, he rises the tide, right? And now, all of a sudden, I think this team's going to be a lot better than people think. And I'm not a homer, I don't think. I think we're pretty fair with this team. But I would absolutely give this offseason an A. I have no reason why not to. What was the move that they weren't supposed to make? What was the move that was out there that was better that they could have made?
That's fair. I mean, if you look at that as the baseline, it's like, what's this team, what they were like last year as opposed to what they are now, and all the moves that they've made, getting rid of Hassan, acquiring Jimmy Butler, even building their young core, something that you don't look at Miami's roster and you say, oh, they've got a young core. Well, they added two rookies. So you're
let's focus on who they didn't move. Like, I think if they had traded for Russell Westbrook, I would not give it an A. I think the moves that they didn't make were almost as good as the moves they did make. Not being committed to Bam and Justice and Tyler here, and just being committed and patient.
And you keep Goran Dragic and Kelly Olynyk for your depth. I mean, at least one of them could be starters.
Moving forward.
Absolutely.
If we want to talk about assets, let's take a break. Coming up next, who's going to take the most threes on the Heat next season? You're listening to Locked On Heat. The NFL season begins next week, which means Crossover Wednesday is back. For the entire regular NFL season, you're going to get a special episode every Wednesday as the hosts from the opposing sides meet up to preview the excitement of the games happening that week. Find your favorite team wherever you get your podcasts. All right, on to our next question here. Which Heat player do you think will end up taking the most threes this season? I don't expect Hero to play a ton. Dragic or Kelly O maybe? All the best. Dr. Carrito, a huge fan from a small Turkish village. We got fans everywhere, David.
That is incredible. And I honestly really am kind of surprised at this. I know that podcasts have a global appeal and you can listen to it anywhere. But a small Turkish village is somehow tuning into our little podcast. You know,
isn't it unbelievable? It's unbelievable.
It really is. It's incredible. And thank you to Dr. Carrito and everybody in your small village who's listening to our podcast. I hope you have huge listening parties at every opportunity. And you know, we'll do our best to incorporate our Turkish fans as best we can.
I hope you have better parties than that. But
good point. That's fair.
Dragic or Kelly Olynyk, I think, are both two good options. I would venture to throw Deion Waiters' name in that hat.
Yeah.
As far as players taking the most threes next season for the Heat.
He was relied on pretty heavily in that aspect. In the 44 games he played, he shot almost 7 attempts. So he was almost the bulk of his shots were from behind the arc. I don't know if that's going to be the case this season. He is definitely a good candidate. I don't think it's Justice Winslow as much as we'd like for him to take a step up. And Jimmy, as competent as he is as a three-point shooter, I also don't think he's going to take more than four shots per game from behind the arc. That just doesn't seem... He's so capable of getting to the rim or taking a capable mid-range shot that I just don't see him all of a sudden becoming into this really prolific three-point shooter. To me, the candidate I think is most likely, it's probably going to be Kelly Olynyk, and I think Dr. Curido kind of hits it on the nose. Goran, I still don't think he's going to be a starter, so even though I see him taking a lot of threes in a reserve capacity, he's not going to be able to eclipse what Kelly's going to be counted on to do for that starting lineup. You're going to have probably Deion Waiters driving to the rim, probably Jimmy Butler driving to the rim, Bam Adebayo for the most part already being an interior scoring presence. And you're going to need somebody to kind of hit a lot of those shots from those perimeters. And you're not going to have a lot of options there. So Olynyk provides the best one if he's the starter. Almost half of his field goal attempts last year were catch and shoot opportunities. He did shoot quite a bit from three-point range.
Yeah, he was second behind Josh Richardson. He shot 319 threes last year. Josh Richardson, by the way, took 460 three-pointers last year.
Yeah.
That is way more than what Jimmy Butler took. Jimmy Butler has never taken more than 250 threes in a season. He's never taken more than 250 threes. Josh Richardson had twice that last year almost. So you take Richardson back. Jimmy Butler is going to take Josh Richardson's position, place in the starting lineup, but he's not going to play the same way Josh Richardson did. That's part of the reason why you go and get Jimmy Butler, is because he does all these other things well. Kelly Olynyk took 319. Deion Waiters took 289. That's why I think it's going to be one of those two guys. The other thing with Olynyk is, without Whiteside, things are set up now where even if you start Olynyk and Bam in that front court, or you bring Olynyk off the bench, either way, he could still be your backup center, right? If you have Olynyk and Bam starting in that front court, you could stagger the minutes where Bam comes out, Olynyk moves over, James Johnson comes into power forward, and now all of a sudden you have this pick and pop situation that we saw Kelly Olynyk thrive in 2 years ago when he played more center than he did last year. So I think he's going to be involved in the offense. We know that they like the dribble handoffs. We know that they like to put Olynyk in that triple threat position where he can do the fake dribble handoff and drive, execute the handoff or a pass, or, of course, shoot the ball. And so I think he's going to be in position to do a lot of it, but I also think that Deion Waiters is going to be asked to shoot a lot of threes like he was at the end of last year. That's why I think it's one of those two guys, and I agree with you on the Goran Dragic point. Maybe not going to play as much as people think he is. Might get traded still midseason. Who knows? Maybe end up coming off the bench, but I think they're going to need his ball handling more than anything, where Kelly and Deion, you're going to need their spacing more than anything.
Yeah, so. I mean, Wayne Ellington for 36 minutes last year shot almost 11 attempts per game. I mean, that was clearly the bulk of his offense, but Deion was second most at 9.1 per 36 minutes. So I don't know. It's just, I can't see him shooting that much, especially if he's healthy too. You know, I think he's going to be doing more of what he's done throughout the course of his career, kind of going downhill, driving to the rim, trying to look for contact, trying to draw contact and hopefully get it, and maybe be rewarded with some additional trips to the free throw line. That would ultimately put him in some much improved category. And if that's the case, I mean, that's, I don't know. So do you have a pick then? Do you think it's Olynyk over Deion or Deion over Olynyk?
I'll go with Olynyk because it's safe, because he took so many, but Deion played 44 games last year. You know what? I'm going Deion. He played 44 games last year, took 289 threes. Kelly played 79 games last year and took 319. I'm going with Deion.
Per game, Deion absolutely outshot, you know, Olynyk.
Yeah. I mean, he took almost as many threes as Olynyk and played half the amount of games. So I'm going with Deion.
Olynyk's still a little timid. You know, we've seen too much that he's just not always 100% comfortable, even though he has a green light and everybody around the team is telling him.
Yeah, and they put him in the Luke Babbitt role last year, and nobody liked that. And I hope that he ends up getting to be more. I mean, we talked about this in our offseason, or our season recaps or whatever we did.
Exit interviews, I think.
Exit interviews. There we go. That he didn't get involved in the offense. And it wasn't necessarily his fault. He was playing out of position almost the entire season because of basically Bam Adebayo being good. And Spo being forced to play Bam as the backup center behind Whiteside until he became the starting center in front of Whiteside. But the Tyler Hero thing is interesting. I do wonder how many threes he's going to take next year. I think he's going to play quite a bit because I think the Heat are going to want to see what he has, and they understand that they're building something here. And we talked about this last week, that they're going to need to be patient, or maybe it was the beginning of this week, I don't remember, that they're going to need to be patient and see what these young guys can do and if they are ultimately going to be the second or third stars next to Jimmy Butler. So I do think that they're going to play Tyler quite a bit. I could see him shooting maybe like 200 threes this year.
Wow, that is a lot for a rookie.
Well, Tyler Johnson took 204 last year. I think, you know, a backup guard.
On a huge contract. I don't know that you're necessarily going to throw Tyler Hero into the mix as heavily as Tyler Johnson played. And you know, Tyler was a more capable defender, and I think he had a little bit more versatile offense at that point in his career than what Tyler can bring next year. I don't want Hero getting pigeonholed as a catch-and-shoot player, and as you pointed out a number of times, you know, he's not comfortable in that regard. He's better off the dribble, or at least he's more comfortable off the dribble. I just don't know how many opportunities he'll actually have with the ball in his hands initiating offense that way. So if he's going to be relegated into a catch-and-shoot role, I just don't know how many opportunities or minutes he's actually going to get.
He's a good ball handler, and he likes to shoot off the dribble, and maybe he'll just jack up enough that way. I don't know. Let's take a break. Coming up next, can the Blazers get the most out of Hassan Whiteside? You're listening to Locked On Heat. Long day at work? Still stuck at the office? Open the DoorDash app. Choose what you want to eat and get your food delivered wherever you are. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off of their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDON. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. Kurt writes in CJ McCollum's interview with Woj, he talks about how refs will straight up not give you calls at the end of games when your team has been complaining all night. He went on to say that the Blazers as a team don't really complain too much for that reason. We just sent one of the biggest complainers in the league over there. A. Will the Blazers get Whiteside to chill out? B. If he does that call into question Heat culture? C. Should the Heat expect to get more whistles next season as a result of Whiteside not being on the team? Could it result in more wins? And D. Can we trade Deion fast enough in order to minimize complaining? Or E. Does it not matter now that Butler's on the team? So, five-part question here from Kurt. We don't need to go through this letter by letter here, but the Blazers, Whiteside, do you think that the Blazers can get the most out of... First of all, can they get Whiteside to chill out? Can they get the most out of Whiteside? How do you expect this thing to go?
No, they will not be able to get the most out of Whiteside. I think that's ridiculous to even consider. I think Blazers fans are optimistic in the same way that Sixers fans are looking at Josh Richardson as an all-star on the cusp. Whiteside, as talented as he is, he's still inconsistent, still ego-driven. The same problems that marked him in his career with Miami, and I don't think that's going to change just because of Terry Stotts or Dame Lillard's presence there. Like, I don't know that those players and that coaching staff is going to get to Hassan Whiteside and tell him, look, you got to calm down. Just do your job. Like, I think Yusuf Nurkic still complained about fouls and contact, and this is a guy who, throughout his career, has shown more than a willingness to both initiate contact and absorb it. Hassan is not that person, and I don't think he's ever going to change in that regard. I think he's going to get hacked, and he's going to look around and throw his arms akimbo and just kind of hope for a call that's never going to come. So I don't expect the Blazers to get anything additional out of Whiteside, so that kind of negates question B, whether or not that calls into question Heat culture. I don't think anything Spoelstra could do can change that. I think you look at the fact that even during their most successful era, Dwayne Wade and LeBron James and even Chris Bosh to a lesser extent all looked for fouls. I think that's just part of the league. I don't think Miami has ever been considered the whiniest or most complainingest team. I think that's still a title that would have gone to the Los Angeles Clippers, especially when they had Chris Paul on there.
I don't know that they even, like, Whiteside didn't strike me as complaining for calls all that much. He complained about a whole bunch of other things. Oh, like, every time he seemed upset, I mean, he complained, but I feel like 60% of his complaining was not getting the ball. And the other, when he did have the ball, he would sometimes complain about it, but, like, I just felt he was complaining about so many
other
things.
If he put up a bad shot...
Chris Paul's always complaining about one thing.
Yeah, you're right. When he would face, like, the double and triple team, and he would still put up a bad shot... and it wouldn't fall, he'd look around at the refs like, come on, I got hit. Yeah. It's like, no.
I'm not going to miss that face. I'm not going to miss that at all. I don't think that, let's say just somehow Whiteside pans out and he just has this all-star season for Portland, which is not going to happen, but let's say it does.
Okay.
I don't think it should call into question Heat culture. They do have a better team And I think that matters. And you have a superstar player like Damian Lillard, that stuff matters. That stuff extends to the other players on the roster. We've seen it in Portland for years where they're making role players be a lot better than they are because Damian's there. And now CJ is there, who is, I think, blossomed into an all-star as well. But it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. The whole thing, as far as the Heat getting more whistles next year, and let's table the Dion thing because we have a question about Dion Waiters in part two of our mailbag here. I don't think that the Heat are going to get more calls. Let's keep in mind that Hassan Whiteside did lead the team in free throw attempts last year, and he was really, really bad at it. They'll probably make more free throws. I don't know if they'll necessarily get more free throws. Dwayne Wade's also not there. He got the benefit of the whistle. He didn't shoot a ton of free throws last year, but every time he did drive, he tended to get the benefit of the doubt from the refs. Jimmy Butler's going to be a big thing there. He gets to the free throw line all the time in a way that Josh Richardson never did, in a way that nobody else on this roster can. So it'll probably even out maybe slightly more, but I wouldn't expect it to be a drastic new thing all of a sudden that the Heat are getting to the line and they're like top 10 in the league in free throw attempt rate. I don't expect that happening yet.
Well, even as much as Hassan did lead the team, he was still only taking 3.5 attempts per game,
yeah.
Half as many as Jimmy Butler.
I mean, the other thing is Bam Adebayo, with the way he rolls to the rim and stuff, I mean, he could end up getting a whole bunch of foul calls too, just because he's in the vicinity and not settling for those 15-foot shot puts, you know?
He strikes me as a guy who's more than willing to absorb the contact and not necessarily call for it either, but we did see on a number of cases, even when he was catching lobs or trying to finish over traffic, because he has the kind of athleticism that allows him to do so, he would get the occasional slap across the body or across the arm or something like that, and that would translate to an and-one opportunity. So I'd expect to have more of those chances as
more
well.
More of a full season of Dion will help. Maybe Justice takes a step in that respect, too.
Oof. That's a huge question for me. His game is so different. Like, he has the floater, which he's more comfortable in. He's kind of, because he doesn't have that elite-level leaping ability, he just kind of puts that soft shot off the glass, and sometimes it falls and sometimes it doesn't. He just doesn't look to absorb the contact. And that's strange considering he has the strength that he does. Like,
that's huge. Yeah. He needs to take whatever Paul George did, because Paul George was the same way early in his career, and he made it a commitment to get to the line more. He's like, I'm going to shoot more threes. I'm going to get to the line. I'm going to be a more efficient player. I really want to work on my shot chart. Right. And I think Justice needs to do that too. But Paul George was a far more longer in his career than Justice is right now when he decided to do that. He was in Oklahoma City by the time he decided to do that. So maybe Justice will get there, but let's just be happy that he's making threes and shooting floaters and just shooting it all right now and hitting things at a high clip. Maybe that comes eventually. That's it for today. You can connect with us on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. Part two of our mailbag will come out later in the week. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Wrap it up, B.